It's Palmer. Comment ça va? Let's see, Léogane New Missions in Haiti is where I went years ago. I wouldn't have this radio show if I hadn't been to my trip to Haiti. We'll go into those details later. I just met this lady today. Her father was a missionary of sorts to Haiti, and she is Ruth Wall Olbrich. And she is with FIDA, the Foundation for International Development Assistance. And here it says, Cato Encore, investing in the dignity of Haitian men and women to provide for themselves and their families. Been to Haiti, it was devastating. As a wealthy boy from upstate New York, wealthy meaning upper middle class, not super wealth, but anybody, if you're washing dishes in America, you're wealthy to the rest of the world. Because what, 95% of the world woke up to dirt floors? Yeah. And I remember that about Haiti.
Yeah.
So how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I
want to hear your story. Now, was your father a Christian?
Of course, yes, he was.
And what time and what's his story and how did he end up being in Haiti? Because didn't you grow up in Haiti?
No, I didn't grow up in Haiti, but I was there frequently from the time I was 12. I was there every 2 years until I graduated from college, and then I spent 5 years there and living there.
Okay, I always took selfish vacations, whether it was to Key West or California, wherever I might go. Mm-hmm. When I went to Haiti, it's the first time that I was in service of others feeding the hungry. It was devastating to see all these people living in cardboard boxes. It's just a horror. Millions. Desperately poor. But going there as a 12-year-old, now I grew up going, I'd already been to Africa, so I'm glad I went. That was like a prerequisite. It got me ready because I went into culture shock in Africa and Zimbabwe. This was 100 times worse. Yeah. What does that do to a 12-year-old? I want to talk to that 12-year-old girl, you. Mm-hmm. You go there with your dad. Why did you go there?
Because of my father.
I mean, did he have a business or something?
No. He was introduced to the work of Grace Children's Hospital in Haiti. Their mandate was to try to beat tuberculosis. And so they had a children's hospital, and he was introduced by a fellow businessman that was in the nursing home business out of the States, and it impacted him and the rest of his life and subsequently mine and the rest of the family.
What was he doing at the time?
My father was, at the time, he was involved in several things. Ran group homes for kids, emotionally disturbed children. I grew up in a home.
So he already was investing his life in children.
Oh, he was definitely there.
Well, I wish I could meet him. Maybe I will someday on the other side.
And he also had nursing homes, and he was those were the two main things.
So it sounds like he had a servant's heart to begin with.
Most definitely. Yes, most definitely.
Wow. Now, did your mom get involved in all this? Or?
Oh, she couldn't have. She couldn't have lasted the 67 years married to him if she wasn't invested in the same mission he was. And she knew that walking into the marriage.
Have you stuck with it to be pleasing to your father, or was it something implanted in your heart? That's because your whole life you've also spent serving the people of Haiti, right?
Well, yes. I've had bits and times off for my family. Like I said this morning, we lived in Asia for 8 years.
Asia? Because of your husband's work?
Yes.
What does he do?
He was in the shoe business.
Oh. So, is he still alive, I hope?
Yes. As last I saw this morning, yes.
Okay. So I'd like to talk to him. I mean, that would be very interesting to learn about the shoe business.
Yes. He was with Stride Rite for a lot of years and then Timberland. So we moved around with his
Timberland
work.
Actually shot a TV commercial here years ago up on the it's one of the green roads left. I forget, Mr.
Well, those
Jones.
Those were the companies we were in Asia with, and then we moved. Wow. When we moved to the States, he took a 10-year hiatus, and he was working with me selling Chinese antique furniture online. And then he went back to the shoe business in 2009 because 2008 happened, and we had three kids in college, and we were selling a commodity, and so he went back to the corporate world and moved to New York.
So you jumped right on. In the email world, the internet.
Oh, yes. Undoubtedly, we were the first online-only seller of Chinese antiques in 1999.
Then I presume you prospered.
We did quite well. We were very well positioned for mid-2000s when the whole feng shui thing was a very big trend.
Yep, I used to have those people on my show.
And in the peak feng of the business, shui. We had a container would be 30% sold before it even landed. So it was just the two of us operating.
So you got those. Now, when you say Asia, do you mean China or where?
China, yeah.
Okay, so did you go and visually look at the items first?
My husband did the buying. So he had a lot of experience in China.
Have you been there?
China?
Yeah.
A couple of times, but my husband spent a lot of time there.
How did you find it at that
China?
Time?
China? This was in the 90s. I mean, it was fine. I only visited a couple of times. We did some tours of the factories my husband was working in, and we went to Beijing once with our kids during Chinese New Year. I didn't find it difficult.
Police state, oppressive, or not really?
Not that, you know, we were living in Taiwan and Bangkok when we visited, so it was like kind of a lateral
thing. An interesting life. You were there for 10 years.
Yeah, pretty much close, yeah.
Wow. So you can speak...
No, I became reasonably proficient in Thai, but when we were in Taiwan, we were only there 3 years, my Chinese didn't take off very well.
No? Seems like a difficult language.
It is. But, you know, just like in Haiti, everyone really appreciates the effort, you know, and they know that you're going to mess up the tonally and all that. Like, that's the tone. Like, you know, you can say the same thing with five different tones.
Cheche.
Right? Exactly. Cheche, you know, it's like,
I try to learn thank you in every language. Ahadi sto paragalo, you know, merci, merci beaucoup. And, well, how do we say thank you? Hey, they use merci, merci, merci beaucoup, French. And yeah, the Haitians, Jazi Remy ou, which means Jesus loves you, and Jazi Remy moi, Jesus loves me. Comment ça va? What does that say? How are you?
At one point, I was very proficient in Creole. Being a Canadian, I learned French in high school.
Wait a second. Now, that's a whole nother thing. I used to have a cottage up in Canada. I'm from upstate New York.
Okay.
On Lake of Bays.
Okay.
2.5 hours northeast of Toronto. Where were you?
So I grew up in a small town called Park Hill, Ontario. Near Lake Huron, and went to high school in Kitchener, Ontario.
Kitchener, been there. I sang at a church there years ago. I want to know this. So I want to hear about your father's story first, because he's the one that did all this.
He is.
When did he come? Excuse me. When did he come to a saving knowledge of Jesus as his Lord and Savior?
As a young teenager.
A young teenager.
Yes.
And did he ever tell the story?
Oh. Frequently, yes.
Tell me the story of you at first, then I want to hear yours.
Yeah, no problem. My dad was deathly ill with asthma as a teenager. He had double pneumonia, contracted asthma, and frankly wasn't expected to live to see 30. The man lived to be 97.
Wow.
So God had other plans, obviously. But he basically committed himself to the Lord. Story goes, there's a couple different stories actually, but it was basically the chance to live and that he would then be there for others that, you know.
So he made a deal with God.
Kind of, yeah.
Save me and I'll be in total service.
I'll do it, yeah.
And he seems to take that once in a while.
Yeah, he does. And my mother knew going into it that
I'm sorry.
They would be working with the underdog, if you will. I'm not quite sure if she realized that their home would be infiltrated with, you know, what's the right term for the kids? You know, kids in trouble with the law, had problems at home. You know, we grew up with a house full of troubled teens, if you will.
Did that affect you in a negative way or a positive way?
I think a little bit of both, to be honest. I think I have more empathy than most people, maybe, I'm very highly empathetic, and I always look at what's behind an action as opposed to just taking an action for what it is.
I think that's godliness.
It gave me, very empathetic. I think sometimes we might have felt a little shoved off to the side because, you know, we were sort of expected to be good, you know.
You weren't priority.
That was kind of a given, yeah. And that's not a cool thing, but, you know, you take the good. You take the good. I learned more than I suffered.
That's good. That's great. Have you written a book about all this?
No, but I journal quite frequently. So maybe one day. I've got too much work to do to sit and write a book right now.
What do you do now?
So aside from the work with Haiti.
And what is that work you do with Haiti?
Okay, so I am currently I'm the country director for FIDA USA. So my role is a fundraising role. And the organization was started in Canada. My parents are Canadian, so they have a very strong base in Canada for fundraising. We just had an annual auction in September. We raised over $100,000.
Wonderful.
We'd like to replicate that kind of base in the States somehow. But
How long have you lived here in Vero Beach, Florida?
I'm only here seasonally, and we just moved here in September 22.
Really?
Yes, so I'm new.
You spend most of your life up in Canada?
COVID was a big change for us.
Yeah. Were you locked in there?
No, we were buying in Canada. So I hadn't lived in Canada for over 30 years.
Oh.
And we have family up there. I have a daughter and grandchild, and we wanted to spend more time there.
But COVID kept you up there or kept you from not going?
No, it had us move there. We were moving there during COVID. We had, prior to COVID, we were in, the most recent place was Maryland and New York. My husband was working in New York City. So we were commuting between Maryland and New York for 10 years. And then COVID happened and his job in New York was no longer. They wouldn't allow them to go to the office. He worked for Global Brands Group in the shoe business again. And
Did they keep him on and just work him for the internet or no?
On a little bit. They sort of went off, sort of like the 3 months of whatever, I don't know what you call it, but they were on and off, but he's basically sort of since COVID was the job was dwindling. And then the year following the company went bankrupt. So that was that. So, we were in Maryland because he was in New York and we didn't have a house in New York. So we would do a lot of commuting between New York and Maryland. And so there was no reason to be near New York anymore because he wasn't there. And it's like, okay, it's a time to buy a vacation home up in Canada. So after a 30 plus year absence,
where'd you buy it?
Southampton, Ontario.
Okay.
Near Port Elgin, Owen Sound area. We're about 2.5 hours from the airport in Toronto.
Which way? Over near Hamilton or?
No, the other way.
The other way, okay.
Yeah. Lake Huron.
Okay.
Lake Huron.
I used to do my gospel recordings up in Westport, Ontario.
Okay.
You've heard of that, right? Or above Kingston?
No, it's up. That's north, right?
Well, you know where Kingston is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kingston, Ontario. Yeah.
So we're quite fortunate. So September 21, we bought a place in Southampton. And the year later, we bought in Vero. And as I said this morning, we're in Florida because I've got a child and grandchildren here in Orlando area. So I've got the family, plus I'm kind of, I like the beach.
Mm.
And the community here, we were really quite blessed. Both Vero Beach and Southampton, they're beautiful parts of the world. Obviously heavily appealing to retirees because of, the nature of where they are, but what I really like is there's still a lot of family life in both areas.
Now, that's a prosperous area in Canada,
mm-hmm.
as is this. We have more Fortune 500 retired CEOs in the zip code than any zip code in the United States of America. Well, you're here, you will. Hang out,
Yeah.
A lot of billionaires, And
so I'm just getting my feet wet here in Vero Beach. But I like it. I've joined the community church of Vero Beach. I haven't joined the church specifically. I sing in the choir.
So, do you?
Yeah. So I quite enjoy that. But, it takes a little bit of time.
Now, did you ever get born again yourself?
You know what? I was thinking about that question because you were going to say you were going to ask about my testimonial. I was raised Mennonite.
Were you?
Yes. So I went to Mennonite.
Your father was Mennonite?
Yes, he was. Oh. Now, not buggy, horse and buggy Mennonite, Russian Mennonite. So you're a little more, advanced. My father was actually born in Ukraine.
Who are the people that ride the buggies?
Those are Amish. Yeah.
But the Amish come out of the Mennonites.
Yes, there's a lot of.
And I went to my first Mennonite church service up in Vermont.
Okay.
I was frequenting this a farm, and they're Mennonites, and I guess I'm quite talkative, because then I talk to the kids and everything, and the mother, and I pull up one day, and I'm talking, and I think the son, who's adult with children himself, said, "Oh, you must be Rhett Palmer." Like, well, apparently kids talked about me because I was talkative.
Oh.
And so then Jesse is the father, mm-hmm. 8 children. And he comes up one day, and we've been talking on and off, and real godly people, very loving. And he says, well, we'd like to invite you to our church. And then after that, we'd like to have you over for Sunday dinner.
Oh, okay.
And went to the church. Of course, the men are in black and white. Mm-hmm. I happen to have my jacket with me. And they are on the right side of the church. The women are all in the bonnets and everything. They're mm-hmm. on the left side of the church. They do use electricity. Unlike the Amish, they use electricity. Mm-hmm. They use, the Amish are doing things that they used to do in Europe. And so they came out of Europe in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do the whole sermon in German or whatever. Now the Amish in America do the sermons in German often. But they don't even do that in Germany anymore. So Germany has matured and is less, quote-unquote, religiosity, dogma or whatever you want to call it. And but the Mennonites have always been. Gerald Durstein, who started Christian Retreat Center, mm-hmm. is the one who had a calling to Israel. He's no longer alive, but I used to open for him. I used to sing gospel music. And for his wife, he and Beulah. That was her name, Beulah.
Okay.
And I remember when I was young, he says, you need to find yourself a Mennonite girl. He was probably right. Life might have gone better with that. But so you're not sure that you actually had a born-again experience.
No, I was as Mennonites, it's baptism by choice. We don't baptize our infants. It's a confirmation. Dedication.
Like the Jews, you have to be the age of responsibility, 13 or 14.
Yeah, so we dedicate our babies, and then it's baptism by choice. I think I must have been 16 or 17 when I was baptized.
What provoked you to say, hey, I want to be baptized now?
Well, there was a keen interest from my parents for that to happen, and I did it on my time that I felt right.
Did you do it to please them, though?
No.
So the bottom line is, do you know that you're born again or you're not sure?
No, I don't know if I would call it born again. I would call myself more of a spiritual person than a religious person. And I would say that...
Well, Jesus was spiritual and not religious. Religious people killed him.
Yeah, well, you hear it. So, I would say that it's the community. One of the big things is the people that I'm surrounded with, that have become part of my life, come in and out, come back in very easily, that are blessings that make me feel my spirituality quite a bit. And God puts us through these times where you need to call him, because if you don't, you're not going to be able to raise yourself up. And it's humbling. So I would say that life's knocks.
You've had moments of being broken and contrite.
Oh, definitely.
Well, he says a bruised reed he will not break, a smoldering candle he will not snuff out. That a broken and contrite heart is of great value in the eyes of God.
Yeah.
Knee power. I call it satellite positioning. I wonder why God responds to satellite positioning. We get all caught up, egotistical, bravado, whatever it might be. Pride is the downfall of man. And then you come to him.
Need to be humbled.
And think,
It's really, for me, it's remembering to ask. It's remembering to ask. He will hear. It's remembering to ask.
And also remembering that there is a God and you're not him.
Yes.
Well, the same with me,
Yeah.
So I remember I got born again at 29. I did not believe in Jesus. I was into Eastern religion. So.
Sometimes it's harder if you're raised in it, because you have to make more of a conscious choice.
Billy Graham, who I had the pleasure of interviewing, had said, I read this, I don't think he said it the day we were together, but in a lot of people go to church and they get just enough that they never get it, mm-hmm. like an inoculation. Jesus said, I wish above all things that thou were either hot or cold, because if you're lukewarm, I will spew thee out of my mouth. And, it's
– That's what I'm saying. So Bible college, I started as a music major, but moved to theology, and that was an enlightening time.
Tell me. I'd love to hear about that. You have
a
degree in theology, right?
I do, yeah. It's like lifetimes ago. I wasn't at Bible college for a career choice. It was more of a life, positioning myself for life. I think that's how I wasn't raised to be very career-oriented. It was more I was raised to make a difference.
Let me ask you this. So Jesus says in the end times, many, many will say, Lord, Lord. And they'll come and say, we did signs and wonders in your name. We released demons in your name. And he'll say, I never knew you. Depart from me. I never knew you. And to others, he'll say, you fed me when I was hungry, clothed me when I was naked, visited me in prison. And they'll say, we don't remember you, Jesus. Well, when you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me. Come in, for your reward is great. It's a little confusing because it almost sounds as though salvation is by works, not by grace. Yeah. We know it is by grace. Maybe he was trying to be severe so people would know, you know.
Pay attention.
Well, you know, we've all met those phonies out there that go, well, praise God, it's a beautiful day. Hallelujah, it's a beautiful day. Stop that. You're not praising my Father. Yeah. Don't use these things as a punctuation.
Yeah.
Go alone into your prayer closet and be sincere with God.
Yeah.
It's like they joined a club or something, you know. Hallelujah, praise the Lord, hallelujah.
Going with the hands up.
No humility, you know. Well, hands up, I don't know. I have duplistic feelings about that. I can understand if you really are sincere and you're surrendering, just like a thief would be, I'm under arrest, I surrender. And God loves surrender. And the pride of man, it's like...
I think that's key, actually, is surrender.
As long as you're not doing it as the peacock. You know, I just watched a video yesterday on peacocks. Have you seen them? How could God make such a glorious thing?
We had pet peacocks in Thailand.
Did you really?
Yes, we did, yes.
It's just outrageous.
Yeah.
And how you're going to say, who's the guy that thought we come together slowly instead of God? That doesn't come together accidentally. I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah.
And there are great, what's the word when you use a circumstance to teach a lesson? The peacock is like just so indicative of the pride.
Yeah.
You know?
Male peacocks, the females are much more.
They're peahens. They're understated.
Yes, they are. They are very understated.
You know? Well, if you think about it, men, we think about women being beautiful in our society, but men have beards. Now, you imagine me, I'm at the edge of a cave.
Mm-hmm.
You come upon me. I have a big beard. You're going to run. So it's like a lot of false bravado protects, you know.
Uh-huh.
And women are back in the cave, and they're feeding. They're going to feed. You know, I think that's why this is a bunch of baloney, but it's really not because women can use both sides of the brain at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. You're a mom.
I am.
You know, it's kind of crazy. But so you study theology. You have a doctorate in theology?
No, it's a bachelor.
Bachelor? Well, yep. Just a bachelor. That's good. So what do you think about that?
About what?
Jesus saying, many will come to me that day saying they did signs and wonders and healed in his name or whatever, and say, I never knew you.
No, I think it's, you know, it's I want to know what's real from here and not the bravado. You know, I mean, just be an example. Live the example.
You're in development.
Yes.
So you really maybe, because you're in that position, maybe you can't say how you really feel, but. You know, I see.
No, I'm being as. I don't have levels of this kind of conversation very often. So
yeah.
You're digging, you know,
yeah.
Digging through the archives here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're in development. Development
yes.
In this day and age means you try to collect money for Haiti.
Yes.
And that money all goes to Haiti.
Yes, it does.
Because you know there was a character named V.W. Grant. You ever hear of him?
No.
He was collecting $5,000. No. $300,000 a month for Haiti and only sending a check for $5,000.
There's a lot of that has gone on, unfortunately.
He ended up in jail. I went to see him when I was a newborn Christian, mm-hmm. And he would say, oh, your doctor's name is Schwartz, and you have this. Well, and they found out that he had hearing in there, and his wife was behind the scenes mm-hmm. telling him about the person.
Yeah.
How reprehensible. How can you not think you're going to have to face a real God? Although.
I think it catches up with you sometime, maybe not right away, but I think it
well, you know, Proverbs, it says, ill-gotten gain grows wings and takes flight. You know, when I buy a steak on a Friday night and I've earned it, it sure tastes mighty good. Matter of fact, if I've earned a hot dog, it tastes better than something if I were to rob, pillage, or destroy in order to get that, you know?
I agree with you.
Yeah. So, but I'm very excited because... I hardly ever go to those lunches, and then when I saw you,
that is really a little bit wackadoodle.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, if I hadn't gone to Haiti, I wouldn't have the radio show.
And that's because you went to Sarasota.
I went to Sarasota to sing. I flew down from New York State. They flew me in to do a concert. I met that Catholic lady. The right. Catholic lady and her husband. So we're, you know, a group of us are going to go to Haiti. I ended up going to Haiti. I didn't have much money back in those days, and I was invited to go. And one of the head guys there said, "You're going to go with that lady because she was a little different, you know." And I said, "Yeah." And you know, it's written, "Give unto others, you know, and your light will rise like the noonday." Give unto others, and your light shall rise out of the darkness like the noonday sun. Mm-hmm. When we're hurting the most, there's a secret way out of grieving. A lot of us will be in the midst of it, and maybe you forget it. Go and give.
Yes.
Go and give. And so I went to this little church, and I sang and did a concert on a Sunday morning. And suddenly I said, you know, I've been invited to go to Haiti. And this man stood up, old guy, says, "I've always hated black people. I hated black people. But Jesus gave me a new heart, and I love people now. And how much do you need to go, son?" I said, $900. He says, "Here's the check."
Oh, wow. That wasn't meant to be again.
And, of course, got to Laogan. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I've been to Africa. But the devastation of seeing the poor of the poor of the poor of the poor, and feeling the blessing of the Lord being there,
yeah,
and the opportunity. And now I went back another time, but now I would do concerts, you know. Mm-hmm. But I run into a Haitian anywhere. Comment say wah? I mean, and they're very hardworking people.
Yes.
They're not lazy.
No,
you know, and there's that connection. Mm-hmm. There's a forever connection.
Yeah, well, you're explaining what happened to me at a young age. Yeah.
What a great gift. I mean, you as a 12-year-old, mm-hmm. you know, here I am, let's say 29 or 33 or whatever age I was when this all went down. But you were young.
Yeah.
Now, also, but you're different than me, too, because you're female. And females, I think, get relationships long before men do. You know, I don't think women. I don't know if you understand. I should have this conversation with a group of women and find out because, you know, like Valentine's Day means nothing to when we're young guys.
Mm-hmm.
Birthdays don't mean anything. Now I know somebody's birthday. Like if you came in here, it's your birthday.
It was on Monday.
Happy birthday, Scorpio.
Yes, sir.
I'll be. Mine's in a week and a half. 21st. What?
When was your birthday?
Monday.
When was yesterday?
Happy birthday.
Here we are. Happy birthday, happy birthday. And, cool. So
we're good as Scorpios, aren't we?
I don't know. I hope
so. Come on.
I want to ask you this. Do you find that relationships you've had, they could be long-term, short-term, whatever, but suddenly relationships will end? Boom! Because that happens with me.
Not too often.
But we might be different. I don't know. I don't know what to think about astrology. I don't know if that ticks God off or not. I know Saul lost his kingship because he consulted a soothsayer. But I will tell you this. When I was younger, I was 14. I went to see a lady that did, astrology? Astrology?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she was Mrs. Drew. And Mrs. Drew, I was born in Poughkeepsie, mm-hmm. right next to Hyde Park.
Okay.
President Roosevelt had used her during World War II because they knew that Hitler was into astrology and he would do things according to the stars and everything so they could figure out what he was going to do next, or they were trying to mm-hmm. anyway. But there does seem to be some traits, you know, but I don't know. You know, who knows? But, I mean, God does use the stars himself, at least one, Star David,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah. I presume is that the same star, I wonder, the one that was in the sky the night that Jesus was born, I wonder?
I can't help you with that one. I don't know.
I don't know either. You studied theology. I didn't.
I did.
I'm a high school dropout that went back to college. And by the way, there's hope for you out there. I never got an A in school. When COVID happened, they were allowing people that are a little older to go to the college, no charge.
Okay.
I went for two semesters, and I was on the dean's list for two semesters.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, to me, that's – you could give me a doctorate. It wouldn't mean as much.
Yeah.
And
what were you studying?
Oh, just general stuff like, let's see, business law, you know, stuff like that.
So this is during COVID?
Yeah, during COVID.
So were you going actually into the
classroom? Yeah, into the classroom. Okay. Well, it was at the end and towards the end, I think, mid to end. And it was out there at the Indian River State College.
Okay.
You know, Bezos's wife came to town recently. And, you know, when they got a divorce, she got $63 billion. She came to town here and gave them $40 million for our college.
Wow.
These are the kind of people you'll meet around here.
Yes.
So I give you a $100 bill as a donation to Haiti. What happens to that $100?
Well, right now, that's almost enough to send one adult to school for adult literacy.
For a year,
yeah.
$100. Mm-hmm. The average Haitian used to make about $300 a year. Are they still making that much?
I can't give you the exact. I'm not on just par with that, but it's pretty low, yeah.
That's a dollar, less than a dollar a day.
Yeah.
And we just, you know, throw dollars around like they mean nothing, you know.
Yeah. So as I mentioned to you, we have a fully Haitian staff in Haiti. So we don't rely on volunteers or mission groups. That has not curbed our progress and our programs during these very precarious times there.
How do you ask for money? That's got to be very difficult. You just met me, and you have not asked me for money.
No.
But how do you motivate? How do you – I mean, I know somebody was involved in that for museums,
mm-hmm.
and she said, well, when you go and have lunch with them, you don't ask for money,
at
least for a number of times you visit with them.
Yeah.
Does there a time you do ask for money, or if it doesn't come to their mind to do it on their own, then you don't ask?
I actually was more aggressive about asking for today than I intended on being by – pointing out the little card I gave to people where they can go online.
That's funny because I'd already taken a picture of that.
You know, and
well, that's because you have that little square thing, that little thing that bring you to the site.
Yeah, so that's a new feature for us to have that. I guess we look for people for the spirit to move. You know, my intention to ask whether people in the audience there had been to Haiti or not is so I could see that there were people like you that could relate very quickly.
And Debbie
quickly.
Avery went. Was there anybody else that raised their hand? Because I didn't look behind me. I was on the front.
There was a few. I just there was enough that I assume there. And then there's other people that would probably are involved in Haiti already through other work other than what we're doing. You know,
yeah, Friends of Haiti is around here.
Friends of Haiti.
That's who I thought you were at first.
Haiti Partners is another one.
Maybe we should get together. I think
it'd be lovely.
I think we should all get together and have a dinner.
I think it would be. I would love that.
Yeah, let's do it.
There's a lot of heart for Haiti in this area, and I'm just looking to tap into it. And as I said, if you want to buy something from CADO, you know, whether it's the artwork.
Where's that on display?
It's right now. It's at Main Street Vero Beach for the month.
Main Street Vero.
14th Ave. Main Street Vero office.
Main Street Vero office.
It's
okay.
Right by the cinema there.
Oh, yeah.
It's right by the cinema.
Sure. Main Street
across
Vero.
Across from Sean Ryan's pub and,
oh, yeah.
and Prime.
They have good they have good corned beef and cabbage there. Are you Irish?
No. I'm Mennonite. I'm German.
Oh, you're German.
German-Russian.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were born where?
London, Ontario, Canada.
London, Ontario. Sang at a church there years ago. Tim Horton
Everywhere
Donuts.
I've been, you've been to a church. I went to college in Winnipeg. That's where I went to.
I have not been to Winnipeg. That's
Cold.
The other side of Florida.
Cold.
I mean, the other side of Canada, right?
I went from living – it's in the west, western part of Canada. So
I'd like to go, though. They say it's beautiful. Vancouver?
Total the west.
Yeah.
No, Winnipeg is –
have not been
prairies.
There.
It's cold. It's a dry cold. It's very dry cold.
I was up years ago recording an album in Westport, and I was invited to these people. I don't know how these things happen. You make friends. I sang in their church or something. They invited me to come to their cottage, and – so I never understood why women liked fur coats. Well, I know there's a glory to it and you feel protected. They put on a full raccoon coat on me.
Mm-hmm.
They were saving it to give to their grandson.
Yeah.
I walked outside in the blizzard. I felt like I was walking in a living room.
Yep.
Cozy as can. I suddenly went, so this is why women like fur coats.
Yes, they do. They do keep you warm.
This is why the men of the woods always wore these fur coats. The animals, you know, you'll see a husky. Did you ever read To Build a Fire by Jack London?
No.
Well, it's a simple short story of his or short book, whatever. Read it when I was young. And he has some – they're out in a blizzard, and he goes to light the match, and he uses up the matches, doesn't have the heat. Anyway, the dog's laying there in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up freezing to death, and the dog is fine because he has the fur coat, you know.
Oh gosh!
Which is just amazing.
Yeah.
That how you know, just amazing creation.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
I know, just amazing. So anyway, I don't know where we're going to go with all this, but but Canada has its own flavor. As a matter of fact, Barbara's son went to Hamilton.
Okay.
And he got his doctorate in archaeology up there.
Okay.
Which is kind of a switch because it's kind of cool that the Canadians gave him money to get his doctorate. Because when you're going to go to a doctorate out of college, folks, in case you don't know, the schools will give you help you do that because they want to be able to say,
sure,
you know, it's 4 years. I mean, he did 4 years in college here and 4 years up there to get that doctorate.
Okay.
And then, you know, whatever it is that they all go through. But he's now
a lot of school.
He was a professor here at this college for 5 years, and then he went out to when he wasn't going to be tenured, you know. So he decided to go out west, works for a company, and they do digs out in Nevada.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. He loves it. From the time he was a kid, he loves it. But anyway, the point is he went to Ontario.
Yep.
And,
yep, so I'm trying to from Ontario.
There is a different pace and a feel up there. I don't know how comfortable I feel with this guy Trudeau. When I was a teenager and I went to Woodstock, mm-hmm. his father was the prime minister.
Yes, yeah.
He was a liberal. I was a liberal back then, and I liked him. The son now, the fact that he complimented the Chinese on being having a great dictatorship and a good fruition, I'm sorry. You know, yeah. What do you think of him?
I really...
You don't keep up?
No.
Good for you. Best you don't.
It's better from my mind.
You know, yeah. You know, I got suckered in. I always wanted to be King, Larry King. And uh-huh. so I've had an interview with Garth Brooks, presidents, uh-huh. secretaries of states,
yeah.
lots of artists and artisans and inventors and stuff, which is what I prefer. But you kind of get sucked in from Rush Limbaugh, that mm-hmm. age that I'm in, and to doing politics. I never liked politics. Didn't want anything to do with politics. And it's just, you know, men are arguing this year, right now, they will argue this month, this date about something, and next year, that will all be gone. They'll be arguing about something else.
Yeah.
They always want to argue the affairs of men. But Jesus plainly said, why do you work for that which you cannot keep, to gain which you cannot lose? And, you know, working for riches on this earth. Now, of course, that's easy to say when I drive a prestige vehicle and I have a nice home,
mm-hmm.
as probably you do too, right?
Yeah. But, well, I have two homes, so I'm doing okay.
Yeah, you're doing okay.
Yeah, I'm doing
and
okay.
so do – so anyway, what else would you like people to know about you, though? I don't know. With that money, I asked you, what would the money go to? I give you $100. Where does it go?
Well, right now, the mandate for FIDA USA is to raise money for adult literacy. So that would go towards adult literacy.
How many of how many, like, they say even in Vero Beach, Florida, 40% of all black males are illiterate.
Oh.
How about in Haiti? How
80%.
80% of males
population.
Or male and
population.
Female?
Population.
And, of course, being able to read is emancipation.
Yes. Yes. That's where I like to put my
– totally, absolutely
we
agree
have,
with
We
you.
Have 2,000 people that are ready to learn to read and write, and we need to find the money to make that happen.
I don't know if I can help. I often thought about taking one of these offices and having a broadcast that was reading our local magazine for the blind
yeah. mm-hmm.
or the illiterate. I've had people come up to me. I've been on doing this 21 years.
Just getting started, huh?
Just getting started. And you read through the lines, and a man will come up to me who maybe is who sells his muscle, time, mm-hmm. you know, labor – for money and says, oh, I listen to your show all the time. I learn everything I know from the show, from talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
And just this is conjecture on my part because men, I mean, people are embarrassed to say, I don't know how to read.
Yeah.
And yet when there was alcoholism in my family, I said we were very affluent when I was younger and that all tumbled down and there was alcoholism. I'm living in a rooming house alone at 14, no adult supervision. And a man said, knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
Read. Just read.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm a 14-year-old. What are you? Everything you wanted to know about sex but was afraid to ask.
so you read.
Playboy magazine. And then I wanted to be a film director. I read all these. But read. My point being, even though people get upset about Harry Potter, I don't care. Whatever you want to read,
read.
If you're on the online, read. Knowledge is power.
Yeah.
Look at me. I ended up being a talk host for 29 years.
Yeah.
I've interviewed kings, I've interviewed presidents, I've interviewed – who am I? I'm a nobody. But because I've read a little bit, it helps out.
Yeah. I'm very pleased that my children really read a lot to their babies. And the babies love the books.
Yeah, and the earlier you start.
Exactly.
Only one thing I wish if I could go back when I was young, and maybe you'd agree with this, I wish I'd been taught maybe 5 or 6 other languages.
Oh, yeah.
Because as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like I went to, when I was, 15, I went to a private school, and I'm trying to get out of Creole now and speak a buenos noches, buenos dias, buenas tardes, como se, no, that's como se. How do I say, what is your name in
Kijangye.
No, but in Spanish.
Oh, in Spanish? Gosh, no, I have no clue.
See, I know it, but I can't say it right now because I'm thinking Creole. Whatever.
Kijangye anyway. is in Creole. Kijangye is how are you?
Kijangye.
Yeah. I gotta.
And it's so fun. They do appreciate it.
They do very much.
I don't understand, like, people coming here. It kind of irritates me, too. I called Disney a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Going to stay over. Only stayed there once. And the girl down at the desk answered, not bonjour. That's Italian. Whatever they say. Good morning. Buenos dias, buenos tardes. Yeah, buenos dias. Buenos dias, da, 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 da. And I said, don't you speak English? So, oh, are you offended that I answered the phone in Spanish? I went, yeah, this is America. English is our language. Learn it. And I went down to Miami, and I'm not prejudiced. I love Spanish people. They're very hardworking people, like the Haitians. But, you know, I went to the mall down there, to the Apple store. I couldn't find a human that spoke English. What the heck?
Yeah.
Learn our language. When I went to Germany, I learned German. When I went to Russia, spasiva, right, whatever, spasiba. Whatever you go, don't you do that? And people appreciate it. So would you like to have learned other languages when you were a kid?
Yeah. I mean, I took French in high school because we had to, but it was a good base to learn Creole because Creole is kind of like a very rough French.
Merci beaucoup.
It's a very, it's like Low German is, you know, my parents spoke Low German, which is like a Plattdeutsch. It's like a messy German. It's more of a work.
Is German considered Slavic?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Sprechen Sie Deutsch. It sounds like, of course, I'm influenced by things, but it sounds like I'm angry, you know?
Well, my parents used to speak German as a code language. So if they wanted to talk about something that they didn't want us to understand, they would speak German together.
Very good. That's fun.
So then when we went, my husband and I were in Haiti together, and we both, you know, I basically taught him Creole. And then when we moved to Taiwan, to Thailand, we learned some Thai, and we had some Chinese. So our code language was kind of a mélange of all these different languages.
Sure.
Like, no one could understand us but us.
Now,
so,
did you, when you were in Asia for 10 years, did you promote the gospel of Jesus Christ, or what did you do for a living then? Is your husband a Christian?
Yes. Yeah.
So did you do anything to do with the gospel there?
I like to believe I lived it.
So what were you doing, raising children there?
Yes,
we
moved there with 3 kids under 4.
So you were a full-time mom.
I was a full-time mom,
the most important job in the world.
And I couldn't really work there either, you know. I mean,
you have to have visas
and stuff like that, you know.
Oh, okay.
So, but no, I was a full-time mom.
So how did you find living in Asia?
Oh, it was good. I mean, I enjoy expat life. We met a lot of very interesting people. In Thailand, our kids went to the British school. So it was an American school at one end of town, and there was a British school at the other end.
So they were highly educated then.
Yeah, they were educated well. You know, they had a very interesting education. They went to the British school in Thailand. They went to a Baptist missionary school in Taiwan, and then they went to a parochial school in Maine. We lived in Maine. We moved to Maine from Asia, in Auburn, Maine, right where the shootings just happened. Okay. Lewiston, Auburn.
I've been passed right through that town this summer.
So we lived in a town called New Gloucester.
We go to Bar Harbor,
okay,
and also have friends in Kennebunk.
Yeah, we were there for 10 years.
Yeah. Last time I was in Maine, in Kennebunk, I went to church with the late President Bush.
Okay.
Sat on the front row of St. Anne's, but not inside.
Mm-hmm.
They brought all the chairs in the summertime outside. You get the ocean coming in, the craggy beach.
Lovely. Kennebunk's just lovely, yes.
I mean, the what do they call the place where they put the pastor?
The pulpit?
No, the place where he lives and sleeps.
Oh, the manse?
What do they call it? Well, it is like a mansion there. It's like a 10-room house. That was next to the bushes, and that was just for
the pastor's family?
Yeah, and my friend's father was the pastor there for years, passed away, and he's an attorney up in Tallahassee. They have 6 children, but they're still allowed to come and use. Matter of fact, when I was with him staying up there, not Laura Bush, who's the daughter? Anyway,
Jenna?
Dora.
Oh.
Dora.
Okay.
Yeah, and her and I were talking. I interviewed her once on via telephone. But anyway, so Kennebunk's a really nice place.
Yes, it's lovely.
And I love those. What are those little black pies they make?
Oh,
Whoopie
pies, yeah. Chocolate.
Those are dangerous.
Whoopie pies, yeah.
So I don't know if you think I've asked you inane questions today or pertinent questions or what you want people to know about.
I'm just being on my toes here because I'm not sure what your next one's going to be. So,
well, I'd like.
You're easy to talk to, though.
Oh, well, that's good. That's
I mean, you know that. This is your job. Like, you know.
Well, yeah, God picked it for me. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is very cool.
How many
cool.
people get to? But my father was killed in a car accident the day before my fifth birthday. I just don't explain it. Why, if some people have to think I have favor. Yes, I do have favor. But he promises that he's the father to the orphan.
Yes.
And he also says, see, I know I'm kind of a, I don't know if you call it a sneaky guy, but I do what I got to do. And he says in the Bible, bring me to remembrance of my promises. So throughout my life, I'm going, you promised. I'll go through a tough time. You promised you're the father to the orphan. He's probably going, oy vey, this guy down here. All right. So, I mean, how many people get told what they're going to do? And it works out great.
Well, I think that's kind of possibly where my father, what happened to my dad. His father died when he was 15. And, you know, he had to grow up very fast.
Yeah.
He has grade 6 education about, yeah. you know. Yeah. And
mine was 8th grade. I have an 8th grade education.
Yeah. He really looked to God as his father in all ways.
See?
Yes.
Maybe he'd read
and
the same
wanted to be,
yeah.
And he took it very seriously to father. To be father to as many people as he could. Like,
now, see, I would like to learn. I want to get to know you better, know what this is, because I'd like to be like that. My regret is I didn't have children. And maybe I wouldn't be capable. Being an artist and being self-absorbed, I think, in your mind.
Well, when I think artist, I think of artist. I don't think of self-absorbed. I think of expressioning, and I think of putting yourself out there and being vulnerable is what I think of when I think of an artist.
But it can be selfish in this. Like, if I go to your house and there are a bunch of – you have your grandkids over. And I'm staying at your house, and I'm upstairs in the room, and I'm writing one of my books, or I'm doing painting. Hearing the comfort of other voices, like I love going to libraries,
okay, yeah,
or bookstores,
mm-hmm.
and I love it. And you know, in library, cause it's nice to know people are around, but I don't have to talk to them. You get what I'm saying?
I do.
I love the comfort of human being, mm-hmm. the safety of being in the herd, but I really don't want
to
have
to
deal with the herd.
Sure, I get that.
And you can take me out to the.
I kind of like being in the herd.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a very nice network of people. And, you know, if you're on social media, which I'm sure you're on Facebook
yeah.
and stuff
yeah, you're
like
on
that.
Facebook right now.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always very acknowledging when you're on Happy Birthday on Facebook and you have, you know, a large collection of people that, you know, acknowledge you.
I know so many people at birthdays. We should have a big collective.
Oh, in November for all the Scorpios.
Yeah.
I'm all in.
Yeah.
We have two gatherings we have to do with our Haitian counterparts that are, you know, doing things in Haiti, and now the Scorpions.
Haitian art's very colorful.
It is very not unlike yours.
Yeah. I never had that gift. That only happened a few years ago. A reverend walked in here. He's no longer alive, Reverend Bill. And he said, "The Lord told me he's doing something new with you. Something new with you." That was 5 or 6 years. He said, "I don't know what it is, but something new."
You got all kinds of
new disciples,
huh?
So I started doing this artwork on an app that I found. And then this lady, African-American lady from Washington, D.C., highly educated, she comes in, and you know how words, the power words, she looks at one of my paintings and says, "This is folk art. I could sell this for a lot of money in Washington, D.C." And at the moment she said it, I became an artist.
Wow.
You know?
But you have the creative genes. Like, it's obvious. Writing, art.
Yeah.
I mean,
But I never thought anybody would buy it. And then
did you sell some?
Well, the ladies from the beach said, "We'd like to have you." I don't know how they found out about them. "We'd like to have a show." First guy ever to buy one was my former engineer. And I was giving away all my paint. He said, "No, I want to pay." So, you know, $60 or something. This summer, one of my Bob Dylan sold for $600.
There you go.
And so it's, but anyway, so I had the show. Now, I want to say this so it doesn't sound like I'm boasting, although I am boasting in the Lord and what he's done for me, is that when they're going to, these ladies from the beach asked me to do a show on downtown Vero. And Lord, please, can I just sell one of my little ones? I don't want to be embarrassed that nobody buys anything. Yeah, well, we sold 10 paintings, and like three or four of them were the great big ones.
Isn't that fun?
And the nice thing about that is no one can ever steal that from me. Should I never sell another painting in my existence? It was an auspicious beginning. It was encouraging. And when somebody will pay, somebody's not going to be nice to buy a piece of art.
No.
They're going to buy art. They want it, and they want to put
it
on their wall. So it's a great encouragement.
Well, I feel like that when I'm selling my Haitian artwork is that I don't want it to be a pity purchase. Like, I don't want to say, hey, I'm buying this because I want to support Haiti. I want to buy this because it's beautiful and it supports Haiti. That's the spirit in which I prefer to sell my.
Well, I'd like to help you out in any way we can. You know, we also have a magazine, and it's 14th year. It's called Vero's Voice.
Yeah.
And I don't know what we can do for you, but, you know, I
mean. But that's what's happening to me here. Like, I'm putting myself out there and letting it be by lead. Like, did I know I was going to be doing this with you?
No.
2 hours ago? I don't think so.
I came up to her table after she spoke. I said, excuse me, but I'm Rhett Palmer, and I'm a radio guy here. And I'd like to have you. Are you free this morning to come after my interview with Mr. Walsh?
I had to be. It was meant to be.
Yeah.
It was meant to be.
But it'd be great if we could have a dinner somewhere or a luncheon.
So one of the things I'm trying to promote, too, is if you saw my business card, the brown one here on the back, it's indicates that I'm available for, you know, evenings if there's two or three couples that want to get together and sort of hear about what we're doing in Haiti. I'm happy to come into the home and
can
do
I
that.
Give this number out here?
You can give that number to
you
anybody.
Can call or text 207-838-2675.
Correct.
207-838-2675. One more time. 207-838-2675. And she's Ruth Olbrych.
Yeah.
Olbrych. Well, that's right on the screen there. At FIDA. FIDA.
Yes.
And that is short for
Foundation for International Development Assistance.
That sounds complicated.
It's a big mouthful. I have to say that a lot. So last year I was doing the Downtown Friday, and I was jamming Jensen's and stuff. I set up a tent, and with the intent of further exposure.
Is that a play on words for the intent? Sorry, I couldn't resist.
And, you know, you just never know who you're going to meet in the course of, you know, setting up and selling. And, you know, sometimes people just want to buy something and they don't really care to hear the story. But inevitably, you can land on someone that's very intrigued. We did a lot of speaking last year to Kiwanis.
Did you?
The Vero Beach Kiwanis was very kind to us.
You could put a mini story on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And so it could be taped or glued on to each back of each painting.
Mm-hmm.
And that way they'll get the story.
Yeah.
And somebody may come upon and say, oh, I'd like to help these people out more or something. You never know.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it's giving opportunities for people to respond. And
I just feel very uncomfortable because there's some things I want to do and need some financial backing. It's like asking people for money just feels so creepy, you know?
Yeah, that's why it's easier for me to sell stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
It cracks the door open, right?
But like I said, I'm not going to go, well, if you buy one of the Rhett Palmer paintings, 10% will go to Haiti or something. Then it's like you said, then you get the pity buy. I don't want anybody buying my art for pity.
No. But it's also, it shows that you're wanting to support a cause too, right? I mean that's a problem out there because there's a lot of people asking for money.
It does justify this. I see a painting. They want $500 for it. And the guy says, I give 25% of everything I earn to this non-for-profit.
Sure.
So I want it. Oh, you shouldn't really spend $500. Well, 25% is going to go.
Exactly.
To that song, and I get the painting.
Do you really want to ask me for a discount? Because the goal is, like, this is all Haitian jewelry that I'm wearing that I sell as well.
Yeah.
It's like, do you really want to ask for a discount? Because that's less money that I can contribute back to the work of Vita.
Yeah.
So, like, but, you know, not everyone thinks on that level. So, like, if you're selling things at a craft show or whatever, most people are just going there to purchase.
You and I have had the privilege of going and serving the poor of the poor in Haiti.
Yeah.
Others have not. Some people have been impervious to the vicissitudes of life because they inherited money.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a blessing and it has a curse. Mm. Some of them die not knowing how cursed they were. Because
mm-hmm.
Birth is painful. And you're going to be birthed into the kingdom of God.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus said, think it not strange when these tribulations come upon you.
Yeah.
He said, the world hates me because I show them that their deeds are evil. And if they hated me, they will hate you.
Yeah.
And but when you go through that persecution or trouble sometimes.
Are you sure you weren't supposed to be a preacher?
Do you think so?
did you think about that for a bit?
Well.
Or is this how you do it through your venue here?
I don't know. It is fun. The word of God is nigh unto my lips, and I don't know how that ever happened. My dad was a lawyer, so maybe that has something to do with it. I do remember this. I was staying at this young lady's house. She was in one of her bedrooms. She gave up the master bedroom for me, very kind. And I woke up in the morning in Binghamton, New York, and I saw this endless table outside the window. I see things sometimes.
Okay.
And it all had gold plates and everything. I think it was the Lamb's Supper. Mm-hmm. And as almost like a camera, you know, a camera comes back in, it zooms in or zooms out.
Yeah.
This was pulling back in. And as it came into the room, I looked at a chair. It was a ladder back, old-timey chair, and it had a priest's outfit folded over
it. This is a dream you had?
Vision dream in the morning as I'm waking up.
From this particular location.
It was like 40 years ago, 35 years ago. Yeah, and I saw that priest's outfit. Well, of course, I was kind of anti-priest at this point because I was anti-religion. I've always been pro-spiritual, mm-hmm. afraid of people that are religious. Because religious people killed Jesus, mm-hmm. And so I don't know. So the priest said, "Well, that what's he trying to show me that maybe there's a spirit of religion in this household?" She was what do they call it? Starts with an E.
Ecumenical.
Well, they're not. They're not Catholics, but they are. Starts with an E. Is there an E? No.
Not Catholics. Not Protestants. Not.
E. No. So keep on. There's another one of those. It's one you know. It's one I know. But anyway. She was one of those, so I thought, well, maybe there's a spirit in this house or something, you know. And, but years later, I go, oh, was that a calling, you know?
Well, in essence, you're doing that here on air when you speak as you
I would think being a pastor would be the most horrible experience of existence. what a calling. And if you have it, you have it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got a friend of mine started a church here a few years ago with 12 people. Now it's up to thousands and thousands.
Wow.
Called that you should go out there and meet them.
And who's
He's
that?
From Africa. So is his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And they have two children. And they started the Oceans Unite here in town.
Okay.
And it's not Pentecostal. It's non-denominational. Although they don't quash the Holy Spirit.
Okay.
You know, it's where like Calvary Chapel is very good at dividing the word, but they deny the spirit and the power thereof, as far as I can tell. And I figured out, but I would still go there because the teachers are great. They're great. I knew the founder of it. I forget his name, but and he and I had breakfast a couple times. But they divide the word of God, but they deny the spirit, tongues, healings, whatever. If everybody, they want to say it all ended when the last apostle died or something. They make this stuff up in their head. It's not biblical at all. And it's because if people can't control something, they don't want anything to do with it.
Hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You and I are going to start a religion. You see, you wear black and white stripes. So I'm going to wear black and white stripes, and we're going to be together, and we're the ones that are going to go to heaven. We're going to call ourselves the Zebra Group, you know, and humans. And they're like that, you know. And then,
yeah.
You know, you're not supposed to wear makeup. You can wear makeup. You know,
mm-hmm.
They turned down – I interviewed Gandhi's grandson. When Gandhi went to a church in India – they said, you're not dressed properly. Won't let him in.
Mm.
Won't let him in. There's a wealthy church in town here that used to have a service over here with the rich folks. And in the same building over here, they had one with homosexuals, druggies, people with tattoos, and moms and dads and kids too, mixture. They were happy. They ended it all. They didn't want them in their church. How can you? You didn't just turn down Jesus.
The church had two separate services.
One was for service for the... The pseudo intellectuals and those with money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, Episcopalian. That's the word I couldn't think of.
Yeah, there's no lack of churches in Vero Beach, that's for sure.
No. But like you, I'm very reticent about religiosity. This summer I was up in Vermont and I went to a Catholic church. Now, my mother had been a Catholic, my mm-hmm. grandmother.
Okay.
And I was always kind of like, finding fault because I got involved with evangelicals
mm-hmm.
who kind of like, well, we're born again and they just have an outside appearance. Who are you to judge?
Because right.
You know what? There are some Catholics that love the Lord. They may not know that they're born again, quote unquote,
yeah.
but they've had an experience
yeah.
that they love the Lord. You will find chaff and wheat in every church.
Yes, sir.
And we all need to be suspicious and watch out for ourselves, you know? I have a poem called Suspicious of Myself. Mm. I'd like you to read it sometime. If you go to Rhett Palmer, you'll see it on there.
Okay.
It's all about me projecting these things. Do I don't trust people because of this and because of that. Is it all because of this, or am I just being suspicious of myself, knowing that my heart,
mm-hmm.
I have to be careful. What is my intent?
Exactly.
I don't want to manipulate, you know?
Well, it's to be honest with yourself on that, and that's, I think, like when I think about people going to Haiti, you know, that they're sacrificing. And I'd like to flip that around a little bit. I think I always felt, and when I went there as a volunteer, I was wanted to be very clear that I knew I was getting more than I could ever give, no matter what.
It's favor of God. It's the strength. His whole kingdom is inverted. It's people in the world think it's on the take, the more you can get. No, it's the more you can give. Even if you're going to make ice cream, make the best ice cream in the world so people will be blessed by your ice cream. George Washington loved ice cream. Want to make a great ice cream, and then you'll be blessed. You'll prosper and be able to do other good things. Yeah. Not what they do today. I mean, you got Procter & Gamble. They'll buy up Tate's cookies like they just did, and now they start to take out the brown sugar, and they're going to get vapid, you know. Mm. And it's all about the gift.
You like chocolate chip cookies?
I do, yeah.
Oh, I make a mean one.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Don't tell my wife, but... Okay.
I'll bring you some.
Will you?
I will.
Okay, for my birthday.
Too bad you didn't get the mango bread today.
You had mango bread there?
Well, one of the little raffle things was mango bread and Haitian vanilla.
Oh.
So there was another gentleman there today that hadn't been there for a long time that won that particular prize.
He won
today.
That.
Yeah.
Great.
I'll bring you some mango
bread. All right. Some people have, I want the chocolate chip cookies.
Chocolate chip cookies, yes. Well, my son-in-law says, because I make the same recipe, he says, I don't know, understand what's going on, Ruth, because... They're always good, but they're always a little bit different.
You know, it is written that Jesus was a man acquainted with many sorrows. And you let on, you didn't go into any depth, but you mentioned something, and it was that you've had your downs and ups and whatever, and I know nothing about you.
No.
But, Jesus was a man, it is written, Jesus was a man acquainted with many sorrows.
Yeah.
And people want to forget this, like it's all hunky-dory and I got born again. You're going to share in the sufferings of Christ because he is, if you are surrendering to him and if you really belong to him, it's just like, have you ever pruned a tree? Do you know what it involves?
I know what you're talking about,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I dated this gal. We didn't really date. It wasn't that kind of relationship, but a friendship over in Gocala years and years ago. And she had groves. And she said, You never prune your own grove. Why? You ask your neighbor to do it. Why? Because you will not be severe enough. If you've ever driven by a grove that's been pruned, and the Lord said, every tree that beareth fruit.
Yeah.
So you're out there doing some good. Oh, that's why everybody did this. Because every tree that bears fruit, they snip it back so it almost looks like it's dead.
Yes.
And then it brings 100-fold or 300-fold more.
Yeah. My neighbor had a Mongolia tree in Maryland. And one year they cut it right back down to nothing. And it was amazing what happened after that. I was like, are you sure?
An abundance of fruit came out of it.
It was amazing. Absolutely.
To every
amazing.
Tree that beareth fruit. Yeah. To a tree that doesn't bear fruit shall be cut down and put in the fire. To every tree that beareth fruit shall be pruned that it may bear more fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're getting pruned, well, he says in
I think
Hebrews.
Sometimes I could use a little less pruning. But
I know. Well, he says in Hebrews, I think it was, are ye bastards? Bastards means you're without parents. Because if I correct you, the Father corrects every child with whom he loves. Hmm. If you, otherwise, you would be bastards.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's not correcting you, and you know, we've met people like that. They have a ton of dough and they never wake up and never have to do anything. They want to play golf every day. And I got here at 40. I could have played golf every day. I maybe played 5 games of golf in 30 years.
Oh, wow.
I'd rather be out doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Something like that, you know, and people will find. The reason I bring this up is not to boast in me. My time on earth is almost gone. I don't give a damn about boasting about Rhett Palmer. But I do want to give the gift that was given me to find out that when you serve others, not that I'm some great servant, but at least I've learned a little bit of that, that's when your joy comes.
Oh, definitely.
Like Haiti.
Oh, I'm a magnet for that.
Well, I think it's really, yeah. I mean, look at your father. And your father ostensibly was a missionary.
Well, I would prefer to call him a development worker. You know, we weren't into the business of establishing churches, but basically living the gospel.
Yeah, but the missionary is defined by building a church?
Well, I'm saying because having lived in Haiti as a volunteer.
Yes.
Okay. And a lot of people like to tout that they're missionaries and like suffering for the Lord in Haiti, you know, and I wasn't akin to be part of that society. Yeah. I preferred to like say, okay, like I said to you before, I know when I come here, I'm going to gain a lot more than I can ever, ever give. I have come to give. My role was to sensitize people to the needs of the Haitians and to give them opportunities to respond, which is not unlike what I'm doing now.
I mean, all I did was feed some people off some trucks. I am not a great missionary. I didn't do anything.
Yeah, like you said, no, your eyes were open. We have, so when we can have people there, we like to promote tours, you know. We call them not so comfortable tours to experience poverty.
But you can't
poverty.
Do that anymore, though.
Well, not currently. You know, hopefully the days
tours
come back.
Tours to help the poor. Say this again now. Tours what? Tell us about
tours.
Tours.
So it's really, we don't expect you to come and build a church or paint something or do anything, like not to take away your vacation, but we expect you to come with open eyes and hearts and to come away with more questions than answers and to really carry the message of Haiti to other people. And so Premier Equipment out of Ontario, Canada, it's a John Deere dealership. They've become a very strong supporter of our work. And
Christians?
Yes, most definitely. In addition to giving the funds that they do to our work on an annual basis, back when we could, they would have a lottery every year for their employees to go to Haiti. So, and anyone that wanted to go to Haiti, they'd put their name in a basket and they would choose, I think, up to 6 people and all expense paid by the company to go to Haiti and experience and see where their money was going to contribute. I mean, that's the best. And that happened for years. Like right now, we can't do that, obviously, but like that's how you sort of spread it. Now, one of the gentlemen that was on that tour twice, actually, is now one of our board members in Ontario.
That's great.
Okay. One of the other members of one of the groups, this is the last group, I was actually with them in March 2020. He organizes an online auction every year to sell these, like the John Deere Classic toys that are very sought after, and raises all that money for Haiti every year. I think last year it was several thousand dollars. And the auction is online on Facebook, and it crossed the border, so we had some U.S. supporters that actually, you know, got involved in that.
Well, you don't have to take money from this group because your husband makes enough, or has made enough.
My husband's retired. I still work. I have another job.
Well, what's your job?
So as I said earlier today, I sold Chinese antiques online for 20 years. I do that on sort of the side right now, but I work as a sales rep for a company out of England that makes Chesterfield sofas. So I sell British made sofas.
Cool.
So I've been doing that for 12 years.
Are those super expensive, really high end?
Well, that depends what you call high end. You can't buy a sofa generally for under $3,000, you know? So people are buying sofas sight unseen from a company in England.
I'd like to see more about that. So are you gifted when it comes to the internet?
No, I wouldn't say I'm gifted. I'm gifted with my gift in selling online is making people comfortable with the process and trusting that what I say, you know, I will stand behind. So I enjoy making, you know, doing the job well and making customers happy that, you know, they get the product that they want. They feel that they had a good transaction, and I've made a lot of friends over the years doing that.
And that's what it's all about.
And even with the Chinese antiques, it's not about buying and selling Chinese antiques. It's like, it's the connector point that I have. Like, I've been 20 plus years, well, actually almost closer to 30 now, in the furniture business selling Chinese antiques. And I have a beautiful network of people that I've met through that I wouldn't have met otherwise. So, you know.
That's great.
So I have, you know, that's a big chunk of my life, and then
gives you a leg to stand on.
Don't talk to me about legs now. So yeah, like that. that fell in my lap. I wasn't looking for it. Someone introduced me to these people, and they wanted a presence in the States, and they didn't have a sales rep, and they offered me the job, and we sort of grew the business from ground up in the States. I do like being part of a startup. I get excited about, you know, seeing things grow and start from nothing. I guess I got that from my dad too.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to talk to you about some ideas I have, but
Chesterfield Sofas. That's my real job.
Wonderful.
Except my husband's retired. You know, we're comfortable.
But
He was the shoe guy. Yeah.
Now, what does he do with his time now?
He's figuring that out. He's trying to see if golf is the thing for him or not. He's involved with the Kiwanis group here in Vero Beach.
That's good.
And the Kiwanis, I do want to give a plug for the Kiwanis group here in Vero Beach. They really opened the doors for me and my sister, who's the executive director for the organization. She because she's a much more prolific speaker than I am and more comfortable, I had her come down
here. Too?
No,
oh.
She's in Canada.
Yeah.
But she spent a fair bit of time here last year, and we had we were the door was opened because of Vero Kiwanis and Al Sammartino, who was the what's the title? But he had responsibility for several different groups, and he introduced us to them and followed up, and we had several Kiwanis groups. We spoke to a couple of Rotary clubs last year, so I'm open for all of that.
And your sister comes down and speaks.
She does. Like,
does she speak about?
She speaks about what I do, but it's she has a different approach than I do. I do more the personal, more comfortable with that. I can let that roll off my tongue a little easier. But she depends on the audience. It's her approach. She's quite gifted, and so she'll speak about the work in Haiti. She'll take different angles depending on the group, different approaches. But she's got lots to say.
How do you feel about dying, going to heaven? You know, I get worried. I like to work. I don't want to just sit around and be happy. I'm afraid if there are no valleys and there are no mountains, if there are no tears and there's no laughter, because usually comedy is tragedy plus time. So, yet it says, "I have not seen nor ear heard, neither has entered the heart of man the things that God has provided for them, for those who love him," you know, on the other side, I guess. So whoever can create this, I mean, who knows what else he can create. This is crazy.
I don't think about dying a whole lot. I think about wanting to leave this world having given it my best shot.
Yeah.
Bring my best self to the table.
Something of value.
Well, just that, you know, I was a good human being and, you know, touched people. I like that idea. Yeah. I mean, I'm touched by people, you know, and they reciprocate to me, and it's humbling.
Yeah.
I feel blessed.
We'll keep doing the good, and I hope I can be of some assistance. Maybe we'll do that dinner for Haiti or lunch for Haiti.
Oh, of course. That would be absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
It would be absolutely fabulous. And I didn't have that lined up when I went to coffee with the mayor this morning, did I?
No.
And you know, that actually was – that there was a cancellation. So
– Well, you weren't supposed to speak? It was a last-minute thing?
No, it wasn't last-minute, but it was this summer. So that – sponsorship for that event fills up pretty quickly. So I was talking to Matt last year. I was trying to get into the gallery that I've
seen
for the month, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's more for local artists, but I know that there was a previous gal that had Haitian artwork that had been in there previously. So I kind of hounded him, and he I said, "Emma, it's a nonprofit and all this stuff." And so he finally said, "Yeah, we'll make it happen." So then this summer I'm reaching out to him about, you know, when I set up and all this stuff. And I said, "Oh, by the way, what's up with coffee with the mayor for November?" I would, you know, because we had talked about it. And he said, "Well, someone else had filled it, but they canceled."
So you could walk in.
So
this summer you grabbed it?
I grabbed it this summer. And I only got back here October 22nd. So I was – all this was lined up in the spring before I came back. So
well, you want me to be critical?
Sure.
Okay. So I was real
happy. Did you have a choice?
I was real happy you were there. But I'm not sure. It would have been great maybe if you could have used that screen and sewn some slides.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And if you had, either way and or, painted with your words, I don't know if you – and maybe I drifted. Maybe you did. So, you know, I'm just speaking flippantly. Was painting the picture of the utter devastation. These people who have not been there have no idea.
I guess I prefer to be like the whole half full as far as half empty. And I prefer to think of the blessings of Haiti as opposed to the devastation. I mean, everyone's doing the devastation. Yeah, I'm trying to raise money.
Development, yeah.
You know, but I prefer to be more hopeful about it, I guess. I mean, Haiti is like a bottomless pit of need. I mean, there's no questions about it.
Don't you think?
Could my father have had a bigger challenge? Could he have landed on a bigger challenge? I don't think so.
And it doesn't make any sense that it exists. I mean, because it's almost like some say it's because of the voodoo stuff that they're cursed.
Mm-hmm.
But I say that maybe God allows it to be to test the people. I mean, look at my life. My whole life was changed by going to Haiti.
Yeah,
and all I did was get
you,
on some trucks and I fed some hungry people for a few weeks. I don't even really have the privilege to talk about it. The reason I talk about it is because I fell in love with the people and I want people to be fed. You want you people to be able to read. I'm a feed guy. Obviously, I like food.
Well, to read and to, I mean, the reading is a bonus that they get as members of the cooperative. It's something. It's a service we offer. But the whole Foundation for International Development Assistance and Productive Cooperatives of Haiti is really about creating community cooperatives where people are, hey, like I said, they decide if they need a well. They decide what they need, if they need grain storage, whatever they need. It's not us coming and saying, we think you need this and we're going to do this for you. Because then they own it, right? They're invested in it. They have to pay money into the cooperative to have a voting right.
Mm.
And then once they start seeing things happen and working together, then it's like, hey, literacy is something they're offering us. They see the people that took the literacy years before and how that's changed their lives. It's like,
wow.
We want some of that too.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, the people are prime right now, like, because it's being run asunder. I mean, you've got gangs, you've got people coming in and managing these gangs and giving them guns, and they're just the terror that these people live in. Like I said, Duvalier days are looking kind of like rosy right now compared to what we are now.
Well, there's more to be said. There were these three handsome black Haitian men who started a company down there a few years ago. They created solar lights, street lights,
mm-hmm.
and they were starting to do well. And then I don't know, they had the earthquake or whatever happened. But anyway, then this company came, these people came along and said to Haiti, because Haiti needs those lamps, said, well, we're going to give you, you know, tens of millions of dollars to buy solar lamps, but not for you to buy it through those boys. You have to buy it from my friend's company in Sweden or wherever it was.
Yeah.
I'm making up the Sweden. It's one of those countries. So Sweden. And so in a way, it's like cleansing money, which put these young black men, these young Haitian black men, out of business.
Yeah.
Then there was a group that had introduced rice.
That
gave rice, and then the Clinton Foundation came in after the earthquake and gave all kinds of rice away.
Yeah.
And they said it would have been fine, but then they kept at it.
Yeah.
And it put these new people who had brought rice into Haiti, these Haitian people, robbing them of it.
Yeah,
I mean it's horrible what they did to those men with the lights.
Yeah, should I put my phone in
here? They have entrepreneurship. And they should be encouraged and blessed, you know?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so, well, it's about time for, we've gone way over what we normally do anyway, but.
Oh, we have.
Yeah, Ruth Wall Albrecht, O-L-B-R-Y-C-H.
The Wall is, that's my maiden name. I haven't gone by it the last 30-some years, but especially in Canada, like, people know my father's name.
Well, as your marketing consultant, I would have just said Ruth Wall. Everybody will remember that.
But I don't go by Ruth Wall. My maiden name, my married name is Obrick, and 38 years married. So
you've been doing it for 30 years, so you wouldn't change it now. But if you were younger and you hadn't been married yet, I would say, wow, that's a good.
Yeah, simple. Then I would have. Ruth Wall is good. It's nice, solid, and simple.
Well, they also say if you have two, like I always get Rhett. They always say, "Are you rich? Are you red? Are you rip? Are you?" Next time, if there was reincarnation, the next time I beg, please let me come back as a Bob. They can't get that wrong. Bob. That's my name.
Well,
Bob.
My name gets slandered in all the other languages. It's Rut or Root, you know, it's because they can't do the TH, right? So they can't do the TH.
Somebody really wants you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen. So again, the website is?
So it's www. FIDA-PCH.org.
F-I-D-A.
-PCH.org. Yes.
All right. You want to get involved. Hey, well, thank you for coming in.
Yes,
Ruth.
Please do.
All right. Lord bless you. Keep you. Make his face to shine upon you. Hey, it's a new day if you want it to be. I'm Rhett Palmer.